Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, a smoky and fire-ridden Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through Blog Talk Radio, YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, you name it, we're there. Our goal here is to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. We want to save lives because 30% of caregivers actually die before their loved ones do. Isn't that terrible? And the lucky ones who don't die, well, they just get to be sicker than their loved ones and actually need a caregiver of their own. So either one is pretty bad. There are some things worse than death, people. We have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg from the Caregiver Space. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello.
Today, we'll be interviewing a very interesting guest, author Yasmin Zahrah Shah. Did I say it right?
You
will not want to miss this show. She's an author of this book, The Caregiver's Journey. See? And we're going to be talking about that. And specifically, I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers, the one thing that we know, is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial. And they have this tiny little problem. They are prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own, and they take whatever crumbs are left over. And there's no crumbs left over. That's okay. They'll take nothing. We can learn something from the airlines because they tell us in the event of an emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first before you attempt to help your loved one with their mask. Why do they tell us that? Because they know that caregivers will burn out if they don't put their needs first. So let's talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that they have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. It could take days or weeks or months or years. Some people never get over it. And so if you feel like you're kind of stuck in this grief, we can help. So let me just say, I want you to get through your grief. I know everybody grieves in their own time. But, you know, if you've been grieving for 5 years, that's probably a little too long. Hey, I want to thank my last week's guests, which actually my last week's guest was me. I started a new segment called 5 Minutes of Wisdom on Dave's Hammock. I thought that had a nice ring to it. And I just did last week's show. Obviously, it wasn't 5 minutes, but it was about 45 minutes on that one. And then I've done 3 short 5-minute videos since on Facebook Live. And I've been trying to do Facebook Live for 2 years. And I don't know what has stopped me, but there's just something scary about putting the phone to your face and hitting the button and going, all right, you're live, warts and all. And I just finally got over that, whatever it was, fear, I don't know. So now it's actually pretty easy. So if those of you who are struggling with Facebook Live, I would encourage you to just take the plunge. Now, just remember, you can listen to the interview, that one, and the one we're doing today, and all of our interviews on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And we're so excited about my book and my book tour. And I know you've heard so much about it. I'm not even going to say anything except it's exciting. It's exciting to visit places all across the country and talk about my book. And so let's get started here. Yasmin. I was having trouble remembering how to pronounce your name. Welcome to the show, and why don't you take a minute or two, introduce yourself. I like to ask my guests, who is Yasmin Zahra Shah? I like saying that. And why were you put on this earth?
Well, I think I was put on this earth to have to fully utilize my left brain and my right brain at
Wow, I never heard that before.
the same time. So my degree is in electrical engineering, and I have a very, very technical mind, and I can speak geek with anyone. But and I was a principal with IBM. I was a chief information officer for a high-tech company, and I have done entrepreneurial ventures in technology. So that's one part of my brain, and the other part of my brain is all about working with nonprofits. And somewhere along the line, about 10 years ago, I got involved in nonprofits in the space of aging in place. And that really fascinated me for a number of reasons. Foremost of that was I was struggling with those issues with my own parents. And for the past 10 years, I've learned a lot about aging in place and work with numerous nonprofits that are all serving seniors in one way, shape, or form. And so I enjoy that aspect of my life and my experience just as much as geek. So that's why I say I was put in on this earth to take both the left side and the right side of my brain and make a difference.
So you really are a geek, IBM and all.
Yes, IBM and all. IBM
Amazing.
Blue.
IBM blue. You know, I have a tie that color. That is an amazing blue. That's the fluorescent blue, they tell us. If you're going on a television show, make sure you're going to pop somewhere with a shirt or a jacket or a tie and stuff. And you must have gotten the training.
I did a TEDx talk not too long ago, and I was schooled on what I should wear.
Well, there you go. You can tell Adrian who's trained here. Now, you were nodding your head, Adrian. You've heard this organization that she mentioned?
What?
What was the organization that she mentioned? And I saw you go like this.
Working with
Working with
aging at home. I was nodding my head about aging at home.
Oh, so what do you know about them? Is that an
Me?
or yeah.
It's not an organization. It's just, instead of going
Oh,
to a
you mean she was
facility.
literally talking about aging at home? I thought it was an organization or a nonprofit thing, and she's saying, "Oh yeah, I know that group." Okay, forget I said that. Let's just go re in reverse. So, Yasmin, why did you write the book? Let's start with something simple like that.
Okay. So there were multiple reasons. The first one really was that once my dad passed and I became the primary caregiver for my mom, and I actually did oversee both of their care even when they were in another country. I immigrated them to US. They lived with me for a while. Then my dad got sick, who was primary caregiver for my mom. And I moved them both into an assisted living, and I was overseeing their care there. And he was the best caregiver that I have ever seen or heard about and experienced. And when he passed, I had such big shoes to fill, and I had the shoes to fill because on his deathbed, I told him I would take care of mom. And she survived about 2.5 years after he passed. So that was really, really challenging. The last 9 months of her life were on hospice, and she was living at my home. So once all of that happened, and my mom passed 2 years ago, Thanksgiving weekend, I needed to do something to recover from it. And both my parents were so caregiving, and if I had to summarize their life in one word, it would be about giving. So I thought, okay, how can I make their death about giving as well? And I said, well, maybe it's by sharing their experiences and helping others learn from their experiences. And that really was one of the key reasons I wrote the book, along with the fact that I had been for 10 years volunteering within a number of nonprofits that were helping seniors age in their own homes and struggling with helping the wider society understand the challenges, not just for people as they age, but also for caregivers. And I thought that this book would be helpful for them. And so that was another reason. And the last but not the least was I actually met somebody at an event, and she happened to be my neighbor. And she and I decided to sit down for coffee one day. And as we were talking, within a few minutes, we bonded over the fact that we were both caregivers, and we shared stories with each other. And I laughed so hard and cried so hard in that short conversation with her. Mm. And it really, when I got done with that experience, I was like, wow, that was such a huge relief and release of emotions. So I said, it's probably good for me to share my story and let other people experience the same joy I felt by sharing and knowing that I wasn't crazy when I was pulling my hair out with my parents and family and all the other stuff that was going on around me as a caregiver. So those were some of the reasons why I wrote this book.
Well, it's an amazing book. Who is Rosie and Lisa?
Well, so I chose to write this book as fiction so I could freely tell the stories without offending anyone. And I made up these two characters, and I gave the main character, who's the narrator, the name Rosie, because Rosie was my best friend who died at the age of 20 many moons ago.
He was a man?
Rosie, no, she was a female. And
but in the
died.
Book, he's a man.
No. Rosie's a female.
Oh, okay, yeah. Sorry. I was thinking of Rosie Greer, you know, the famous football player.
Oh, God. What about Rosie O'Donnell?
He was there when Robert Kennedy was shot. He was holding his head, you know.
Yes.
It's an amazing book. Let me just read the chapter titles because I really was moved by them. Chapter 1, The Birth of This Book. Chapter 2, Starting Our Caregiver Journeys. Chapter 3, Arguments All Around. Gee, I can imagine what that one's about. Chapter 4, Exploring Home Options. And I want to ask you later how you came to find that assisted care living, because from my experience, you know, 9 out of 10 of them I wouldn't put my cat in. So it's like finding that proverbial needle in the haystack. Chapter 5, Keeping Them Safe and Secure. I love the pictures with that one. You've got a hand with a little what's that flower called with the where you just blow them in the wind, Adrian, you know, you go and they all go like little parachutes.
Yes, I know what it's called. It'll come to me.
But because we're old, we can't remember the name, but
the
it'll come to
lion.
Us. Dandelions. Keeping
like
them safe
dandelion.
And secure. Yes. 6, taking their independence. Taking their independence. You mean taking away their independence?
Yes,
yeah,
I do mean
that's
that.
Sad. Yeah. Chapter 7, leveraging legal documents and necessary evil. Chapter 8, captaining. Is that a word? Being a captain of their transition. I'm a sailor, I should know. It probably is a word. Captaining.
Word didn't Microsoft Word didn't complain when I used
I'm sure you wouldn't put it in the book if it wasn't a word. Chapter 9, supporting end of life. But we're just going through the process, aren't we here? Chapter 10, grieving after death. It just covers it A to Z. Awesome. Any comments so far, Adrian?
No, I'm listening to the list.
Okay.
Lights.
So you're really big into therapy for healing as a primary caregiver, because kind of a caregiver should be in the business of healing their loved one. You know, and healing can mean so many different things. There's so many definitions for healing. Talk about that, Yasmin.
Yeah, I think we generally just think of physical healing, making sure that they're going to their doctors and taking their medicine and overseeing all of that. But there's so much more to that. I mean, I'll just give you an anecdote. When my dad was in assisted living, it was really a strange environment for him. And it was difficult for both him and my mom to settle in and figure out how they were going to spend their days. And I knew that he loved chess. And I found out that one of the caregivers there also loved chess or wanted to learn how to play chess. So I bought my dad a chess set, and he started teaching the caregivers how to play chess. And that was healing and therapeutic for him, because it was something that brought him joy. It was something, I mean, he was still contributing to society. But when people learn how to play chess, there was a purpose for him. And I think helping people find purpose is a huge part of healing.
Oh, yeah, that's a big healing, you know. Yes. Just every teacher will tell you that they get more blessed than the people who are learning from them at their knees, so to speak.
Right.
So life's tough experiences are wasted unless you tell your story to help others. What does that mean?
Well, what that means is, you know, if you go through tough experiences in life and you don't share them with others and you just deal with them inside of yourself, then there are people around you that are going through those exact same experiences. And if you only shared with them your own experience, they might be able to learn from them and not make those mistakes. That's a big one. But at the least, they would feel like they're not the only ones that are going through that crazy stuff. And as a caregiver, when I was going through my journey and pulling my hair out at times, it really helped to have somebody say, this is normal.
Yeah, exactly.
Others go through validation. This too. The validation.
I'm not crazy.
I'm not crazy. Yes.
Well, that's a biggie. The third reason is to help raise awareness for the challenges we're facing as a society with our aging. That is also, you know, if you're going through a difficult situation like I did, like Adrian did, you know, if we keep it to ourselves, we're committing two terrible crimes. The first crime is we're saying to God or to whoever your higher power is, you know, what I just went through was a total waste. It had no purpose, no meaning, etc. And we realize that this is the reason you went through it, so that you can share and help people. You know, that's why I'm doing television tours and wrote the book and all that, because I went through a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes, and I want to help other people go on the shortcut, you know, and not take the scenic route, so to speak, that I went on, you know, because there I felt lost and alone. People feel lost alone. I'm telling them, don't give up. You know, I almost left my wife because I was so stressed at how she was treating me, because she was grieving and anger was her favorite emotion. And I can tell them, hang in there. It's going to pass. My wife eventually got to that acceptance. But if you don't even know there's a grief process, you don't even know that there's acceptance and grief and depression and all of that. All you know is my person is treating me like crap and I don't like it and I'm leaving. You know, they don't know that it's a journey, and eventually you'll get to your destination, which is acceptance, in a wonderful, wonderful place. So tell us about the PEW Research Center, the Baby Boomers Retire, something like that.
Yes.
I'm just reading some notes here that I didn't fully read, so maybe help me out here.
Well, you know, it basically what started off in Beacon Hill, Massachusetts, where some seniors got together, they pooled their money, and they hired a social worker and said, "You're going to help us age in our own home, and you're going to be our one place to call no matter what our needs are."
Wow.
And they got so successful, they were written up in the AARP magazine around 2000 and whatever that date is that I wrote.
December 29th, 2010. Yeah. Ooh, roughly 10,000 baby boomers will turn 65 today, and about 10,000 more will cross that threshold every day for the next 19 years.
Well, I started telling you a different research story. So sorry about that. But,
oh, that's
but
okay.
You're right. Yes. So do you want me to continue with the other one,
yes,
or should we
yes,
talk about
go ahead.
This one?
Okay. Talk about this one, and then we'll go into the next one.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, not only are 10,000 baby boomers aging and crossing 65 on a daily basis for 19 years just in U.S. alone, these statistics are mind-blowing when you look at the entire world. I mean, you look at China and you look at India. I mean, everybody has this problem of people aging, and then on the flip side, not having enough caregivers, because right, people are having smaller families, they're more spread apart, and so there is nobody locally for a lot of seniors that can take care of them. So, you know, on one hand, you're growing the population of seniors that need care, and on the other hand, you're declining the number of possible caregivers. And it's going to be a real challenge, not just for U.S., but all over the world.
That's right. It's like a company that's losing money. There's two ways to fix that. You increase income and you reduce expenses. But in this case, they're increasing expenses and reducing income, which just makes it even crazier and worse.
Yes.
Wow. Adrian, what are we supposed to do about this? Now, this started in 2010, so we're already 10 years into the or 7 years into the process.
Yes.
So technically we have another 9 years or so to go, and then all the baby boomers are like dead. There'll be 85, 86, 87. And now we're into the next generation, the millennials.
They'll be living to 125. So
you're like Jiminy Cricket. I'm going to live to be 103.
I mean, people will be living longer, which adds to the problem.
Yeah, yes. Dementia, namely, because I read an article that the reason dementia is so prevalent today is because people are living longer. Usually people don't get dementia until they're in their 90s or whatever, and people didn't used to live to their 90s, but now they are, and so it makes me question, well, how long do I want to live? I don't think I want to live to be 90 or 100 unless I have good health, but we can't guarantee our health, can we?
No. I mean, in some ways we can, but there's a lot that's not in our control.
We can certainly try. We can do what we can, and a lot of people are getting on board with that now. But there are still a lot of people who just live for today, which is not a bad thing, but they don't think about tomorrow at all and what the consequences of their actions might be down the pike.
Yeah.
So, you know, I encourage people to live for today, but wisely.
So Yasmin, what were your personal challenges as a caregiver? I mean, did you suffer burnout? Did you like freak out? You said you were pulling your hair out. I see it's all grown back. That's good.
Yes.
It's coming out white, though.
Well, there's things you can do for that. did you burn out? Were you close to burning out? What were your symptoms? How did you know that there was a problem?
Well, I think I would snap at times where at people and situations where when I'm in a normal frame of mind, I wouldn't do that otherwise. Mm-hmm. That was definitely part of burning out. My health got impacted severely, and I started drinking for the first time in my life.
What was your drink of choice?
Well, the only thing I can do to this date is Moscato.
Moscato.
Sweet and eases your brain, so it helps in two things.
So you were self-medicating.
self-medicating. But I there were also signs. I mean, I put on tremendous amount of weight. I didn't have time to exercise. I wasn't eating properly. I was eating on the go. There just wasn't enough hours in the day. I was dropping stuff from my plate. I mean, I pride myself in making sure the important things are taken care of around me, professionally and personally, and for the family. And I kept dropping things around me and was getting really, really stressed because I was...
Were you isolating yourself? Did you let go of your friends and you weren't, you know, it was just you, you had no life?
Yep. Yeah, that's really true because, I mean, there were times that I would expect family or friends to help me and jump in and know what I needed. Because I didn't want to open my mouth and ask for help. So the more that happened, the more isolated I became. Because I was like, I don't have time to tell people what I need. They should know. I went through that phase.
Yes, they read minds.
They should know what I'm going through with my dad in the hospital and mom in assisted living. And me having a full-time job and a 10-year-old son. They should know I'm going crazy.
But they don't know, do they, Adrienne?
No.
They don't know.
They avoid you.
They're not mind readers. Well, they avoid you, I think, after you've sort of not been able to tell them what you need. I think if you are prepared and are ready to ask, it's the asking that is so difficult. If you're prepared to ask for what you need when somebody says, you know, whatever you need, give me a call. It's like, no, I'm not going to wait for that call. I'm going to tell you now what I need. That was unspoken, but you thought that, you know, to myself, I said that. You have to be ready to ask for what you need. And what everything you're describing is what the first thing that anyone will tell you is you have to take care of yourself. And we get tired of hearing it. And you're a perfect example of that. You were able to juggle everything except you. You put you on the back burner.
Yeah. Like I say on my show tour, I says, everyone has one of these. It's called a cell phone. You turn it on, you punch in the number. Hello, mom. Grandma's driving me crazy. I need help. Call your brother. Call your sister. Call your wife's ex-husband. Call anybody. But get over the notion that if you can't do it all yourself, that you're a failure as a caregiver, because that attitude will kill you, as well as other things as well. Well, listen, let's take a break, and then we'll comment on that. So, don't go away. We will be right back. Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, has just released his sixth book entitled It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through, because he is one. And he now speaks all across the country, offering caregivers his incredible caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. We'll help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life, and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today, or buy one for your special caregiver. On sale everywhere, and at caregiverscaregiver.com. And we're back with Yasmin Zahra Shah and Adrian Gruberg and me, Dave Nassani. And it's like we were describing you, isn't it, Yasmin?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think what I learned over the years is if I was able to articulate a small little thing that they could do to help me at that point in time, rather than just say, fire, I need help. I didn't get much if I did that. But if I said, can you do this particular task for me?
That's right. Be specific.
Be specific. That helps.
Because they're going to, believe it or not, caregivers actually turn away help. Hey, anything you need? No, I got it. Thanks. You know, and I don't know what's going on in their brain, but have a notepad ready and write down everything that you know you need, or your wish list, you know, and maybe be as outrageous as you can. The next person who says, hey, is there anything you need? Wait, yes, there is. When are you free? Okay, great. Well, today at 4 o'clock, I need someone to go to the store and buy some mayonnaise and lettuce because mom likes lettuce on her sandwiches and blah, blah, blah. No, you can't do that. Well, how about tomorrow at 7 a.m.? I need to go to the gym and I could use someone to, you know, just be prepared and don't let them off the hook because they offer. So why did you introduce the word teenager, and what does it mean to you? That's curious.
Right. Well, you know, I was mentioning that the story about Beacon Hill Village and how they got this village started in Beacon Hill with 10 seniors and hiring a social worker. So that has now become a movement, and there's over 300 villages across the country and some internationally in making. I got involved in the village movement in 2007 timeframe when I owned and operated hair salons. And
wow.
A logical transition from being a technologist.
Yeah.
But during that time, we started, two ladies wanted to start a village similar to the one in Beacon Hill in a community of Tier Santa. And we defined very quickly with a core group, which was the leadership team, what services this village was going to offer to the seniors living in the community and what geography they were going to serve. But meeting after meeting, we all argued whether to put the word senior or elderly or older adults. And I kept thinking there should be a better word. There should be a word that we can all accept and say, you know, I'm proud to be a teenager.
I get it.
I get it. I didn't.
Yes. And you know, that's
teenagers,
funny.
Teenagers.
Yes, exactly. And you know what's in common between a teenager and teenager?
What?
Teenagers have what teenagers desire. It's no school, a monthly income without working, to spend on whatever they want, a driver's license even without bad driving, and having no curfew, no acne, and also sex without having to worry about pregnancy, right? Just have it all.
You are so funny. Were you always this funny, or is this just developed?
I have a funny bone. It comes out off and on. It comes from my mom, not from my dad. She's the funny one.
So how long have you been speaking?
How long have I been speaking?
I don't mean speaking. I mean, you know, where people are listening to you, like the TED Talks.
Oh, you know, the TED Talk was just a few years ago. Professionally, in the geeky world and technology world, I've done many, many presentations at big and small level.
Really?
I've just started my journey of speaking about aging and caregiving not too long ago.
Oh, and the TED Talk was about caregiving?
TED Talk was about villages and how I got involved in it and why I think they're a good thing.
So if I want to watch that, how do I do it? I go to TED Talks and then I type in your name and you'll come up, or how does that work?
If you just Google Yasmin Shah TEDx, it'll come up.
Great.
Great.
So Hillary was right. It does take a village. That's the second time I actually admitted that. I'm scaring myself. Okay. So introduce us to the characters in the book.
All right.
We talked about Rosie before.
Yes. So then what we had to do was emulate Rosie as kind of like me, but not really. And Lisa is kind of like the new friend of mine. But the more important part is between the two of them, they have actually taken care of 7 people that have all passed away. And the journey of this book that you described in the chapters go through the end to end for all 7 people. And, you know, the 4 characters that Rosie took care of were her mom, dad, an aunt, and an uncle. And Lisa was mom, dad, and an aunt. And each one of them, I chose different personalities, different life experiences. And so that when somebody is reading the book, they might be able to relate to one of the 7 to say, well, this one certainly is like my mom. So there is somebody who's extremely social. There is somebody who's extremely introvert. So it kind of, you know, that's how I did character creation.
That's very clever. Is this your first book?
Well, it's really my first adult book. When my son was 5 years old, instead of just giving any party favors, I had, in previous years to that, actually made up a character that I used to use with him all the time called Llama Bear. And the reason I came up with that character was because he hated haircuts. And I had a hair salon, so it was a big problem taking him for haircuts. Because he would cry and make the customers feel like, you know, my stylists weren't doing a good job. So I made this character up and I started telling him this story about Llama Bear. And it's desensitized him to, you know, Llama Bear goes for haircut. He has a good time. So why shouldn't you have a good time when you go for a haircut? So when he was 5 years old, we created this first children's book. With pictures, and we created a Llama Bear character that was his vision. And we've written 5 of those Llama Bear books that are picture books. And we even wrote a chapter book that is Llama Bear. Now, I haven't published those because...
Well, hurry up and publish them.
I know. I keep telling my son, can I go ahead and publish them? Because if I publish them, I want him to be able to do an interview like I'm doing with you.
Yeah.
And he's just not ready for it. So we'll publish them soon.
Wow.
You should make them a gift set.
That's a great idea.
This is your first and only book so far then, published.
Yes, that's correct.
So what made you actually have whatever it took to actually pull the trigger and publish this book? Because that's a big deal. First of all, writing, it's a big deal. Writing a fiction book is even a bigger deal. And, you know, developing the characters, I mean, it takes a lot of skill. Did you have help doing this, or did you just discover you had all this talent?
I discovered I had the talent along the way. I must say I had really a couple of very good friends that were willing to
help
me bounce things off. One of them was Brad Phillips and Karen Faulkner, and there were others too, but those two primarily helped a lot in helping me bounce things off and keep me sane as I wrote it. You know, frankly speaking, the hardest part of this book was not initially writing it. It was the final rounds of editing, because I had to relive everything end to end as I was doing editing in a span of a day. And that was a tough thing to go through.
Yeah, you self-published this, right?
Yes.
Okay. So how's it doing? Are you on Amazon and all that?
I'm on Amazon and Kindle, and really, Dave, I have the honor of doing the first interview and first publicity thing with you. So I'm
launch your book tour.
I need some tips, Dave.
Don't worry, I'll coach you.
Thank you much.
My rates are very reasonable.
All right, I'll call you.
So, How did they become a caregiver? Rosie's aunt and Rosie. I'm reading my notes here. Rosie's aunt needed care and no one else is willing. Oh, yeah, that's a common story.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, Rosie's aunt, Rosie happened to be in Pakistan and her aunt was there and no one else was around to help her. And she actually became a caregiver right there on the spot, taking care of her aunt in the hospital with her uncle. He was a demanding guy. He had helped various family members and he felt entitled to help.
Wait, we all know these people, don't we, Adrian?
I do.
They're in our family.
And then Rosie's dad didn't really need help. He was taking care of himself and his wife and doing a fantastic job of it. But, you know, they, like many caregivers, his health was starting to deteriorate. So Rosie felt like she had to step in, and she really had to step in when he ended up in the hospital and such.
Yeah. And then I'm thinking you didn't make up these characters. Did you actually know people like this, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, a lot of these characters have stuff. You know, there's similarities in this character from my mom, dad, aunts, uncles, and a lot of other people that I've seen in the village movement. So a lot of this is really real, but it did happen to the characters just like the way I defined it.
Now, is English spoken widely in Pakistan?
All my schooling was in English.
So this book will be big in Pakistan as well. You'll probably be an international bestseller soon.
Yes, I'm hoping. From your mouth to God's ears, Dave.
So let's talk about parents. What's the different dynamic when your care receiver is a parent and not, you know, some other person who may be a distant relative or even a stranger or a neighbor or something like that?
Yeah. I think with parents, you go through this grieving process with the parents and yourself. I mean, they are going through the grieving process of becoming dependent and a care recipient. And you are going through the process of saying, okay, I have to be the one in charge now and help them. So it's a role reversal that both of you have to undergo. And in some relationships, it's easy because the parents are willing to let go and let you be the caregiver.
And or the parent.
Some relationships, it's really, really hard because the parent just wants to stay the parent and tell you how to do the caregiving job for them.
Yes. And that happens in real life when your two-year-old wants to run the house. And yes. You know what? I know a lot of places where the parent has put that two-year-old in charge. That two-year-old speaks, the parents jump, you know. I'm sure you know people like that as well. And that's what happens. And then, like you said, the role reversal happens. The parent doesn't want to admit that they have dementia, like my mother-in-law. We're going to see her right after we finish this show. And she is not happy right now because her son from Minnesota came out to help deal with some reality in her mind because she's delusional. She has made up this whole delusion that makes sense to her. She's not going to admit that she forgets where she puts things. So every day I get a call, somebody broke in the house again. This time they took all my silverware. They took all my money. They took all my jewelry. They took pictures off the wall. And she doesn't realize that she's hiding these things because she doesn't want someone to steal it. And then she forgets where she hid them. And so, of course, someone stole them. And so her son is telling her no, you know. And so I was watching the video because I've got the house on the video so I can watch her. And they were just having I don't have sound, but boy, body language speaks volumes. They were just having a knockdown, drag out fight because she was just being hit with a bunch of reality that, she just refuses to accept reality. And so obviously she refuses to allow her son to become the parent. And like my mother was very sweet. She accepted it. She knew she had a bad memory. She knew she had dementia. And she was being very cooperative, and everyone at the assisted living just loved her, and they cried and when she died, and they to this day they say, oh, we miss your mother so much. But this woman, gosh, she's a little like a witch, you know, and she's even accused me, the one person in the world who's done more for her than anyone, she's accused me of trying to drive her insane, trying to kill her, and trying to steal her house. But, you know, you try not to take it personal, but it's hard. Yes. Have you run into any of that?
Oh, my God. Yes. My mom had what we call drug-induced dementia with Parkinson's as well. And my mom, over the years, she was the sweetest, kindest lady who would never even hurt a fly. Mm-hmm. And she hit caregivers in assisted living.
Oh, my. Became violent, wow. Huh?
Became violent when she
aggressive.
Was and she wasn't herself. She was sleepwalking, and she would hit because they were trying to take her back to her room.
Sure.
Yeah.
Stuff. And the, yeah. And I think the toughest one thing for dementia with my mom that I had to deal with was when she would forget that my dad had passed. Mm. And there was this one day where she used to sleep a lot when she was on hospice. And, you know, she'd be awake for 2-3 hours and she'd fall asleep. But then this one day, she just would not fall asleep. And she kept wanting me to come into her room and say, why is dad not coming into the room? And, you know, if you know anything about dementia care, you have to live in their world. You can't try to convince them that their reality is false. That's the worst thing you can do with somebody who has dementia. So I, you know, acted as if, you know, dad was still alive. And that was really, really hard to do. But
yeah.
she claimed, you know, I just saw him go outside my bedroom door. Where was he going? I said, well, he went with my husband. And she said, well, why are they going? And why aren't they coming back soon? And I explained things to her, just made up stuff. And then it came night around 10 o'clock. She's like, well, he's never out this late. Why isn't he back yet? And I said, well, because they decided to spend the night somewhere else. That didn't make sense to her. I mean, it was really, really challenging when she'd have those episodes because she wasn't always like that. Sometimes she was right there in reality. She knew exactly what was going on. But there were times that she was just completely lost. And those were hard times.
Yeah. Well, tell us more about the organizations that you're currently involved in as we wrap this up. We've got about 5 minutes to go here.
Okay. All right, wonderful. So, you know, foremost, I talked a little bit about the Village Movement, and my passion is really to help seniors age in their own homes with building community of neighbors that are also seniors, helping each other. And I had started this organization myself called Village Core, and what we are trying to do is provide resources online and expert help on topics like incontinence, adaptive clothing, and so on and so forth online, but also with the aim of helping launch more villages in and around San Diego initially. And then there is the Village to Village Network, where if you Google vtvnetwork.org or Village to Village Network, you can find villages that might be in and around your cities. And I'm on their board and I'm the technical person, their CIO, helping them. Then the third organization is called Aging 2.0. And that particular organization, I'm an alliance member representing Village to Village Network on Aging 2.0. And Aging 2.0 is helping new technologies, new startups, new services providers to help seniors in a new way. So that's why they call themselves Aging 2.0. They have once a year conference. They have chapters all over the world where they are looking and hunting for new startups in the aging space. So that's really a fun one. And then there is San Diego Senior Alliance. I'm vice president on that nonprofit. And that is a networking organization for Meals on Wheels, the PACE program, the Area Agency on Aging, Jewish Family Services, Elder Help. There's a number of 211. All of those have representatives, and we're trying to work together to help seniors age in place within San Diego. And then there is also Village Movement California, which is also another nonprofit helping villages succeed and thrive in California. So these are some of the organizations that are on the aging side. And I also had formed several years ago a networking organization of technology leaders. I had co-founded that with a friend of mine. I'm still the marketing chair there. And I use the folks and get their advice when I need technical advice on my aging-related initiatives. So those are the organizations I'm involved in.
Wow. Are you retired? How do you have time to do anything else?
And she writes books.
and
Well, I think like we all say, if you're passionate about something, you find time.
Yes. Caregivers are overachievers.
Yes.
My wife is like that too, and she only has one arm and one leg basically, and she puts me to shame. She puts everybody to shame. Yes. I don't, you know, where there's a will, there's a way, I guess.
Exactly.
So if somebody wants to get a hold of you, what do they do? If they want your book, they go to Amazon.
Yes.
It's called The Care. What's it called? There's a word up here, experience. So experience is in the title?
Yes, Experience Caregiver's Journey. And the reason experience is in the title, Dave and Adriana, is because I have a number of other books planned with the first word being experience.
Oh, a series.
It's a series.
See, there's rhyme or reason to this here.
Yes, yes. So villagecore.org, LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter.
Explain the picture. It's curious. I don't know what that white thing is.
Oh, it's clouds and
no, down snow. Here. Down here.
Oh, that's snow.
No?
That's what?
Yes. What? This picture was taken in Norway. That's snow.
Snow.
Snow. Yeah.
S-N-O-W.
That's correct.
A little patch of snow and a little trail of snow, or is that a river or something?
Oh, it's just a walking trail. And yes, a trail of snow from the mountaintop.
It's a journey.
It's a journey.
So where's the rest of the snow? Why is it only in that one little tiny spot?
Well, that we'll have to ask God.
My mother says I ask too many questions. I think she's right.
But this is a picture. All the pictures in the book, including this one, were taken by either me, my husband, or my son. And this is from our trip to Norway last year.
Oh, so it's one of your personal pictures. That's awesome. Yeah, that's what I did on my book. It's My Life Too, Reclaim Your Caregiver Sanity. I was in Hawaii last year, and you know, I paid the guy $20, and we went out on a boat, someone took my picture, and my editor says that would be a perfect picture for your book cover. So sometimes you take a picture, you don't even realize that it's going to become famous. All right, so you gave your email and all your information. Adrian, how do we get a hold of you?
It's Adrian, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org. And thecaregiverspace.org is the website, and Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, everything else, you.
Okay, now I'm going to stop here for a moment because I forgot to put the second commercial in, and I'll just put it in later post-production. So first I got to say, and I think we need another commercial break, so don't go away. Welcome back to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, and with our guests, Yasmin Zahra Shah and Adrian Gruberg, and I'm Dave Nassani. Okay, now I can fix that. Okay, well, thank you so much. And just a reminder for everybody that we're on the air every Wednesday at noon. Look for our show. And remember, you can find all our shows, if that's not a convenient time for you, they're all on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com, and on YouTube, and on iTunes, and on Blog Talk Radio, and on Stitcher Radio, and just everywhere. Just Google Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, and you'll just find us. I'm amazed at how many pages. I counted like 10, 11 pages where I am on. That is amazing. It's amazing. Why me? I don't deserve it, but I'll receive it. Thank you so much. And yes, so everyone, we will see you next week. And thank you so much for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.